Assalamu alaikum and welcome to the Politics and Media Show with me, Salma Yaqub. In the first half of tonight's show, we'll be discussing the war in Afghanistan. It's now been 10 years since the UK joined a US-led invasion and subsequent occupation of the country, as the US went after Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden after the 9/11 attacks. The conflict has been dubbed by Western political leaders as a crucial part of the so-called war on terror. Nearly 400 British servicemen have been killed, while thousands of Afghan civilians have lost their lives. The conflict is increasingly unpopular in the UK, and a major protest marking the 10th anniversary of the war will take place this Saturday in London. Well, in the studio with me to discuss the war is Jonathan Steele, a British journalist and author of Ghosts of Afghanistan. Welcome to the programme. I'm also joined by Kate Hudson, who's the General Secretary of the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament, one of the organisers of the demonstration on Saturday. Welcome. We're also joined today in the studio by Andrew Murray, one of the organisers of Stop the War Coalition and also a partner in Saturday's demonstration. And finally, we have with us Max Malik, author of a new novel, The Butterfly Hunter, which deals with themes of relating to the war on terror. Welcome to the programme. If I can turn to you first, Andrew, some people might be saying, come on, we've had all these demos, the war's still going on. What's the point of having another demonstration this Saturday?
Well, I think your introduction, Salma, identifies some of the points. Firstly, this is a very unpopular war. The great majority of people in this country would like to see our troops withdrawn from Afghanistan either immediately or within a very short time frame, very much shorter than the 3 or 4 years which NATO and David Cameron are still talking about. It's a war which has transparently failed to deliver on any of its stated objectives, which is destabilising the region, and which hasn't made us or the rest of the world one whit safer. And I think it's very important that we carry on keeping the pressure on the politicians to bring this to an end as rapidly as possible. I mean, you can hardly find a diplomat or a journalist like Jonathan with deep experience of this or soldiers who really believe that this war can in any sense now be won.
Well, we just had a commander, a former commander of the British troops in Afghanistan just a couple of weeks ago on this programme, still justifying continued presence. And we have the American president saying a couple more years. I mean, they're talking about decreasing troops, but they're certainly not talking about complete withdrawal. And if, as you're saying, it's unpopular and they haven't achieved anything concrete, well, what are they doing there? So if it's not their stated aims that are being achieved, what other aims are being
achieved? I think there's a large
achieved?
Element now of what you might call NATO machismo, that NATO cannot be seen to lose. And some diplomats and soldiers have more or less said this, that it would just be too humiliating for the world's most powerful military states, the United States first of all, of course, and Britain, to be, as it were, defeated in one of the poorest countries on Earth. And I think it's if it were to be seen that NATO couldn't impose its will on Afghanistan, that might have ramifications for the entire world order, as it were, particularly coming after the disaster in Iraq as well. But certainly no one can explain, neither David Cameron nor President Obama, what they expect to be better in 2 or 3 or 4 years' time than the situation now, and how they would then explain to the families of those British soldiers, American soldiers who will die in the meantime, and they will die in large numbers in the meantime, what on earth they're dying for.
Coming to you, Jonathan, would you agree that it's really about keeping face now more than any real achievement that could be made?
Yes, I'm afraid it's about sending more young men and women to die in order to show that the first wave of young men and women who've died didn't die in vain. I mean, that's about all it is, really, and it's a tragedy because they're all dying in vain. As Andrew Murray says, they haven't achieved anything that
and
they wanted
to do.
And
do they really think something different is going to be achieved in the next 2 or 3 years?
No, I
was
think
it achieved
it's a combination of
in the last
inertia,
10 years.
It's a combination of worrying about loss of face, and I think it's also, this is a really important point, this kind of built-in military optimism that they always look on the bright side even when they're facing disaster in the face. And one of the points that I make in my book, which is called Ghosts of Afghanistan, which goes right back to the Soviet period, because I was there in Kabul during the Soviet period, is that the Soviet military realized that the war couldn't be won. So when a new leader came in, Mikhail Gorbachev, who inherited the war, just like Barack Obama inherited a war, and he saw, Gorbachev saw that the war couldn't be won, instead of the military saying, oh, you're being a wimp, you're pulling out, it's ridiculous, just let's have a surge, let's have more troops, let's have more equipment, the military said, you're absolutely right, we cannot win this war.
Well, this was my next question to you. Neither Cameron nor Barack Obama were seen to be starting this war. So surely when we had these changes of government in Britain and in America, there was an opportunity there for them to have drawn that line. So why did they not take the opportunity and get and chosen almost to get more and more bogged down and associated with the wars?
Well, I think we're moving into another area, which is the media as opposed to politics. The media in both Britain and the United States is controlled by very right-wing groups which have this machismo idea built in, that you've got to be strong, you've got to show muscle, you've got to brandish the sword and so on. And anybody, politician who comes in and takes a more moderate line and a more sensible line, I would put it, is then branded as some kind of coward. And it's, you know, it's the same thing Obama, I think, probably would like to do more than he's doing in terms of withdrawing, but he's got Petraeus and his generals and so on, and of course the Fox News and the right-wing media, which tell, you know, the electorate that he's pulling out and he's weak and he's succumbing to the terrorists and all the rest of it.
Well, we don't have Fox News in the same influential role here in Britain, so what's Cameron's game then?
Well, I think this is a very significant question, really. I mean, I agree very much with Jonathan. Politicians don't like to look weak. That's a concern, whether it's ending wars, giving up nuclear weapons. They're very much concerned about that. But I think the great mistake they are currently making is not looking at where public opinion actually is. And for at least the last 10 years, on every major question of war and peace, whether it's been Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, replacing Trident, the majority of the population has been opposed to those issues, whether it's for financial reasons or indeed for moral and political reasons. And I think the politicians need to wake up and see that they are going against the wishes of the majority of the population.
By that logic, it should be a win-win. They'll become more popular, they'll be following the will of the people. So what's the fear then?
Well, I think that there is very much an entrenched view that in order to be a successful politician, you need to be strong and you need to kind of play to the military issue gallery. Of course, there are other wider issues, wider interests which Britain has. I mean, there was, over the last 10 years, there's been considerable talk about oil, natural resources, trade routes, location of bases, those kinds of very concrete benefits, which military benefits and strategic benefits, which Britain's leaders feel they can gain. So those do play a significant part in the equation as well, I feel. And certainly in the anti-war movement and the peace movement, we've held that as a very strong part of our analysis, that some things are said by our leaders about moral things, about humanitarian things, but when it comes down to it, there are other significant interests.
Well, Max, if I can come to yourself, you've chosen to write a novel, a post 9/11 novel, based in Britain, but very much impacted upon these international events. Was it this post 9/11 world which inspired you, or was there something else going on when you decided to write this book?
Yes, I think 9/11 was incredibly significant. It cannot be understated. You know, hundreds of thousands of people have died subsequently. And I think I personally will never forget, most of us won't forget where we were. I was actually at the RAF base working as a doctor in Stafford, which has subsequently closed down, and I was locked in. We all were, it wasn't just me. And we didn't know what had happened, and I'd heard the news coming, driving down the motorway back to Birmingham. And it was just such a shift, you know, that anybody would dare consider, you know, the audacity of it, attacking America on its mainland, something that had never been done. But the subsequent years and the consequences of the politics that has been played out, not least of all Iraq and Afghanistan, and using 9/11 as the determinating factor, or, you know, at least a large reason for doing what has been done, has made it all the more significant. And of course, you know, we all abhor the loss of life and the terrible, you know, events of the trade towers collapsing and so on. But, you know, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people across the world have suffered as a result of using 9/11 as the club to bash so many and get out issues that are really more about long-term foreign policy and